Succession number 18342, Reel 3.
They would march because they'd drop their rifles and their hands would be up to surrender, and they'd get them to put their hands on their heads and they would just march. Just one man would be enough with about 20 or a dozen prisoners. They would just be glad to get away from the artillery, is my opinion.
Did you see anything of civilians in Normandy?
Yeah, we saw a lot of refugees, people moving out of the area prior to battles commencing. The idea was to get out of the battle area as quickly as possible with their belongings and little carts with their equipment on, all their belongings that they could carry. They had little horse-drawn carts or hand carts and children with them, and the idea was to get out of that particular area as quickly as possible, otherwise they'd get mixed up in the fighting and a lot of them would probably have been killed.
Did you see anything of the treatment of collaborators?
We did in France, actually. The French used to round them up, and especially the women, they used to shave their heads, and they'd have after the battle was over, they would have a show of head shaving with all these particular people, girls mostly, women mostly, and shave their heads. Of course, they'd be in disgrace because they couldn't do anything about their hair, and it was already off. And the idea was to just mark them out as collaborators. They didn't shoot them, so I never heard of anybody being shot as collaborators, but I remember in village squares they used to shave their heads off.
How did you feel about that?
Well, we thought they deserved it, actually, I suppose, because they were collaborators. They were collaborating with the Germans, and they could be very dangerous, I suppose, really. It would be helping the Germans in various ways with when they had the French, what do they call them now, Maquis, I suppose, wasn't it? They would denounce them to the Germans and they'd get shot, and they were helping the Germans in quite various ways, I suppose, and they'd been living with them anyway during the war.
What were living conditions like for you in Normandy?
Well, we were mostly in slit trenches, and we did manage to get shaved nearly every day. We managed to get a quick wash and a shave somewhere along the line, and when we were out on rest, which would be so many days perhaps, everything would be all fixed up for open air showers. They have these showers would work with lots of hot water, and you just go in one end, drop all your old clothes as you went in, and you'd go through, have a shower, you'd have clean towel, and when you came at the other end, there was clothes there. You just uniform, vest, shirts, pants, socks, and you'd keep your boots obviously, and everything was clean. We were fairly well managed to keep clean. I remember we used to have a wash down with a mess tin of water sometimes. It was just to freshen you up made all that difference. And the Germans were lice ridden, actually. They were covered in lice, and if you went in their slit trenches, you could pick them up, but all our uniforms were treated against that sort of thing.
But you weren't wounded in Normandy.
No, I wasn't wounded anywhere at all, actually.
Now, you were just about to tell me about the going to push through to Arnhem.
Yes, we started off at Belgium, and the idea was to push through to relieve the troops at Arnhem and hopefully cut the Germans off. And We went up through Holland, and being in very narrow roads with dikes on either side, there was nothing. You could not go off the road, and the tanks going up through, they were very vulnerable, and Germans could be hidden in the woods across a couple of fields or whatever, and their range was quite high. They could fire several hundred yards, and one or two of our tanks got knocked out. They were with us, and some of them skewed off into the dikes and they couldn't get them out because they couldn't get traffic up there. And we managed to get through as far as a drill that's on the bank of the River Rhine, just below the bank of the River Rhine, and that's as far as we managed to get at that particular time. The Poles were on our left. They had the positions on the left. They were paratroopers as well, and we could sit in our trenches and watch the Dakotas going over, dropping supplies, and they were quite low. You could even see the men standing in the doorways of the planes, waiting to drop push all their ammunition or food or whatever was required out of the planes. And several of them were shot down in front of us. You could see them in flames coming down. But unfortunately, we never did manage to get across to relieve the troops at Arnhem.
How much fighting were you in as you pushed through to drill?
Well, we were isolated cases of Germans on the left or the right, wherever. Very, very small amount as far as we were concerned, because the idea was to push right on and get across the river and relieve the 1st Airborne Division. There wasn't a lot of fighting as far as we were concerned, but the Germans came in behind and cut us off, and that's when most of the fighting started. The Germans got in behind our positions and tried to cut us off. Well, they did cut us off for a time, and we just couldn't get across the river because there was a ferry there. We were hoping to get this, pick up, use this ferry, and he was there. The ferry was there right up until the time we got up to the river bank, apparently, and then it disappeared. Whether the Germans suspected we were going to use it or somebody just took it away. We don't really know what happened to the ferry, and never did find out what happened to the ferry. But we went through Nijmegen, right up through to Driel, which was a small village, and that is as far as we got. We had one sergeant major killed there in the road, and he's buried at the churchyard there, and is attended regularly by the people there, which is very nice. But we had very little action up there except for skirmishes behind us. Being in the front position, I suppose the Germans came in around behind, and the idea was to cut us off.
Which particular individuals were you with all the time in your section?
Well, after we got up into Germany, up into Holland, during peacetime, before we went abroad, rather, we went on different courses, and my particular course was first aid. Now, my friend who was with me, we were one and two on the Bren, he went to anti-tanks training, and he got transferred to an anti-tank company, and I got transferred from B company to D company as a stretcher bearer, because they'd brought in different regiments came in to reinforce the battalion. They broke up different regiments because they were being cut up badly, and we were receiving different regiments, mostly light infantry regiments, and they came into our battalion, and I was transferred as a stretcher bearer up in Holland, and the chap that I was with, the gentleman I was with, he was a bandsman during the war, and he was in battalion HQ, and he was then transferred to D Company, and we went on through there as me as a stretcher bearer. We were in pairs with one stretcher and all our equipment. We were basically trained to just apply field dressings and pick up people and get them back as quickly as possible. There's nothing you could do but put on field dressings. We had no other equipment, no morphia or anything like the Americans had. The Americans had morphia and everything else. But we just, the idea was to pick them up and get them back to the field, what they call the RAP, Regimental Aid Post, where the MO would stitch them up or fix them up, get them back as soon as possible to a major hospital.
How did you feel about being transferred to D Company as a stretcher bearer?
Well, I was a bit upset at first, but after a time I got together and I knew some of the people in D Company. In fact, we had a Major Lonsdale, which was a very nice major, and he took over from Major Fry, who had been right through the campaign, and they felt that it was time he went out for a rest. And Major Lonsdale took over from Major Fry, and this particular private that I was with, he was a bandsman, as I said, and he'd been in D Company right through from Normandy, and we all got on quite well together, actually. But at first I felt a bit lost without the usual familiar faces, what was left of them. But we soon settled in, and we worked quite well together, actually. And from there on in, we got on quite well, and it was just a matter of getting people back to the regimental aid post as quickly as possible. There was lots of carrying. There was walking with stretchers. Quite a lot of walking, carrying wounded on stretchers, which is quite hectic, really, and across country and what have you. But we did quite well. We picked up, we did what we could for people and made them comfortable. That was the main aim with getting the wounded back.
Which month were you transferred to D Company in, do you think?
It was end of October, November, I think, around about that particular time. October, November. I think probably the middle of October to the November.
What was the fighting like in that period before Christmas 44?
It was pretty hectic, actually. It was pretty hectic. After the Arnhem do, we got pulled out of there and went. The idea was to try and take Geilenkirchen with the Americans, and this particular place we moved back to the outskirts of Geilenkirchen, and we're going to hopefully take Geilenkirchen. And our position was, our task was to take Hoven, and this was the last particular battle I was in, actually. We moved up to Arnhem, the beginning of Arnhem Woods, which was 2 miles long and about a mile wide. And we dug in these positions. We dug around D Company headquarters. And there was another stretcher bearer and a new man with him, Desmond Moore, he was called. And just before this action, we'd been out on a rest and had baths and everything. And when we left the rest area, his last words to us was, "I'm not going to get very far from here," he said. "I know I'm not going to get very far from here." And we got up into Arnhem Woods in the morning, at night, and in the morning we were into the trenches, and we got out to get our breakfast. We were just about to get our breakfast, so we came up with hot porridge, I can remember. And just as he got out of his trench, an 88 fired from very short distances. No sooner it had an explosion of the gun, it hit the tree right above his head, and he was killed instantly by shrapnel. And his friend, which was a new man, was in the next trench to him. He was buried, actually, and we dashed across and pulled him out, and he was dead. He had a piece of shrapnel just under his helmet, and there was nothing we could do for him. But we carried him back to the RAP, and we thought the other man was going to be dead anyway. So we concentrated on this young Desmond because he was our friend. We knew him quite well, and this new man we got back, and when we got back, we dug down, and he was just about to push himself up through the slit trench. He actually dug himself out unharmed, which was wonderful, really. He got it all on his own, actually unaided. And the next afternoon, they put in an attack for Hoven. They had to take Hoven Village, and the Americans were going to take the other areas around. And we went through the woods, had several casualties there, which we carried back through the woods, back to the RAP. And just in the evening, we got into Hoven, and there were lots of wounded there, lots and lots of wounded there, and lots of dead. And we established a place in a cellar with all the wounded we could find. And put them in the cellar, and the company commander said, "You boys, you can go back and come up in the morning." So we said, "Well, we can be picking up the Germans first thing in the morning if we're here, or the wounded actually, and we can look after them, the ones that are here." So we did that. We decided that that would be all right. We did that. We got all our own wounded back from Hoven by stretcher, and the Germans that we captured, they carried them under escort back to the RAP, so that got rid of all our wounded, and we stayed and dressed all the German wounded, and you could hear them crying out, "Kamerad," in the dark, but we couldn't find them in the dark, and we had to wait until the morning. Well, in the morning, the Germans came in at first light with tanks, and they got in beyond our positions. They infiltrated right down through the woods and got in beyond our positions, and we were cut off. There was about 15 or so of us, and the CO, the company commander, he managed to dive back through, and he got back through with his batman, and we were taken prisoner at that point. And we were there all day carrying the wounded, picking up the wounded around the area, and it was raining streams, belting with rain. And we were out under escort. The Germans put an escort on us, and we picked up all the wounded, which was mostly Germans, and carried them back. And it was dark by the time we'd finished, and we had nothing to eat all day. In fact, we'd had rations brought up the night before. They couldn't bring up anything hot, so they brought up a big bag full of sandwiches. Because we had white bread at that particular time, they were getting us up white bread, and we had cigarettes, chocolate, or whatever was going, they could carry up light, and we left it all there. I'm afraid we didn't have time to bother with it, and we thought several days afterwards, after we'd been not eaten for days, wouldn't those sandwiches have been nice if we could have got our hands on them at that particular time. And from there on in, we were taken prisoner. The German SS commander came up and he interrogated us and what have you. And at night we got put on a truck, and off we went into darkness. We didn't know where we were going, actually.
And do you know the date that you were captured?
It was about the 18th or 20th
of
November. About the 18th or 20th of November.
And was it SS troops who captured you?
Yes, it was SS in there, yes.
How did they behave towards you?
Well, the commander was a bit rough. He grabbed us by the collar, as I remember, and he says, I don't know what he did actually say. He could speak English, not too badly, but we were rather scared, actually, thinking we were going to be shot.
You don't know what he said to you?
He said something about the war, or the Krieg finished, and I presume he meant for the war was over as far as we were concerned. And really, you know, really shouting. And the troops were searching us at that particular time. They took whatever they were looking for, cigarettes, and I had a belt around my trousers, and they took that one. I had a gas cape. We used to wear gas capes because we wanted to keep the rain off, and that was the only thing we had, and they decided that would be nice for them, so they took my gas cape and my friend's gas cape. But there were several other prisoners there as well, and they disappeared, and we stayed all day. We were left there to pick up all the wounded that were lying around. There were quite a lot, and under escort, we carried them back to a safe place, shelter, and it was a whole day job. It was dark by the time we left there, and in the meantime, the British artillery found out that everybody was either had to withdraw or captured, and they started to shell the area again with 25 pounders, and it was some experience to all this artillery. I don't know how we weren't killed because of the fact that it was what they call a box barrage. They used to fire it one way to the left and then to the right and box you in, and you were just in the middle of it all. And the Germans, they used to think it was automatic, like a rifle would be, automatic fire, and it really was frightening. And they used to really get the wind up, but they kept us there all day. We found all the wounded, picked up all the people that were around there, living or dead, and brought them back to shelter. And then we were pushed into this covered wagon thing, and set off under guard into the darkness. The next day they threw us in a black loaf, and
into a what?
A loaf of black bread, and we set off then for a station. So I don't know where we were, no idea where we were, and they essentially put us on a train. There were civilians around there at the same time, very subdued, wondering what it was all about, I suppose, and we got on the train, and the trains they were travelling on were the carriages at the front of the engine were what they called third class carriages, and the fact was that they were all slat seats, just wooden slat seats, and the thing was with these that they put all the prisoners or whatever at the front of the train next to the engine, because the British used to come over and fire at the trains as they were travelling along, and they would invariably hit the second or third coaches, and anybody that was in them would obviously get killed. So we were put up there. If we were going to be attacked, we would be sure to be killed. And we were fortunate, really, we didn't get killed. We travelled along until we came to a ravine sort of thing where the bridge had been blown. And we were all piled out and instructed to carry. We had to carry passengers' luggage down one side of the ravine, sort of thing, and up the other side, and pick up another train, and on again, until we got to a little place called Fallingbostel, and there we were marched about 3 miles out of the village to the camp, Stalag 11B, and. We were put in there with thousands and thousands of prisoners in there, and had to find a bunk which was three high in the rooms. They were three high and very tight together. You could just squeeze between them. There were so many prisoners in there that we were having to bunk up two in a bunk. There was no blankets or anything. It was just bedboards, what they called bedboards, pieces of wood, slats, and you slept on that. And with a piece of could be blanket, but there was nothing much, and we just had to sleep head to tail in there, and finished up being rather lousy before we got repatriated. We used to go out collecting wood from time to time. We were different parties under escort go out in the woods collecting wood. The only wood you could collect were the roots, because everything was used. They even used wood for making the paper for bandages, and there was nothing we could use except the roots of the trees to light a fire and make a brew or whatever. If you had any tea, the Red Cross parcels were very, very thin on the ground at this particular time, because the transport was so chaotic with the bombing that the Red Cross couldn't get the parcels through. If there happened to be one, there would be one between, so 18 or 20 men, which was just a small share of whatever was going, which was always welcome. We lived on a thin soup made of sauerkraut or barley, or mostly swede, which being just swede with no salt was rather hard to take, actually, but we were glad of anything, and used to eat it up gladly, and a slice of bread, black bread, in the evening with some sort of jam. It was supposed to be jam, or it was a cheese, which is very, very slimy, sickly looking cheese. It was tasteless, I suppose, and a couple of potatoes, and the coffee was ersatz coffee, which was burnt acorns, made up, no sugar, no milk. The only sugar or milk we got was from a Red Cross parcel. We did have, the Red Cross did supply a tablespoonful of salt, of sugar rather. Every day, they're supposed to supply a tablespoonful of sugar every day, and sometimes they probably didn't have the quantity, so we didn't get it. But that was the only thing that we had. If it hadn't been for the Red Cross parcels, I think we would have really starved. The MO, there was an MO in the camp, a British MO, and he kept a small stock of various parcels for anyone that was really sick. Anybody that was really down and sick, something to try and help them along. He'd supply them with a little bit of porridge or a little bit of cheese, and all this stuff was compressed into tins. And when it was opened up, it was marvelous. A small tin would feed about two or three people, and he had a knack of helping the ones that were really down. And there were quite a lot of young men there that were really down, dysentery and various other ailments, and the problem was with lice, because we couldn't get a bath, and we had no soap, only if you happened to have a piece of soap, and the soap was like the German soap was like pumice, and there's no toothpaste as such. The toothpaste looked to us like Vim, actually. It was a powder, something like a Vim. And the only way we could get any of these things was through working parties going out. If the working party went out, they didn't get paid. The money went into a fund, and anything that was...